Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley Davidson. Trade it, sell it, they want it. Go online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com, click on the Sell to Us tab, and get a serious cash offer for your bike. Worth Harley Davidson, I-29 just south of the airport, or online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
He kicks and he delivers. Swing. There's a long drive to right field. Deep toward the grandstand. Tucker looking up. It is gone into the grandstand. Grand slam. Kyle Schwarber.
Allen sneaking.
No,
I don't know.
He did not make that.
I do not know. Let's see where they spot it.
He did not make that.
The Titans think they have stopped it. Let's wait.
They got it. They did it. They did it. Yes. Not yes. Not yes. Hell yes.
And now a man who always feels like, hell yes, go for it, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay, right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a beautiful, spectacular fall.
Oh, my goodness. This is amazing.
Sunny Chamber of Commerce. Commerce?
Yep.
Converse? Converse?
Converse. Chamber
Chuck
of Tanner's. Converse.
Chuck Tanner
or,
Tuesday.
Or Chuck Taylor's.
Chuck Taylor. Whatever. Chuck Tanner, the old manager of the Braves.
This is what they call a postcard day.
Yeah. This is called finishing up.
That's all right.
Right?
I'll just stare out at that perfect sky for real. Yeah. About 10 seconds.
It's couple a little more words, and now we're ready. Okay. Right you are, Kay.
It's not quite as blue as it was yesterday.
Oh,
it's
my.
It's pretty damn perfect. Yesterday was 99.9. This is 99.7. Why? I literally walked out of here last night. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. It can't be any better than this.
Okay. Okay. There it is. Orgasmic day for one Curtis Siebold. You heard it
borderline.
Here first.
Borderline.
Borderline.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. Thanks for sharing, Curtis. Thanks for sharing.
I'm an open book.
Hi, Curtis. We got a jam-packed program for you today. Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus is going to be with us in the 3 o'clock hour. He's got some numbers. We're going to talk about interceptable passes, I know, because he's been hammering me with texts. And he says, my numbers are crap. Your numbers are crap. I've got the real numbers, right? These are the real numbers. These are the Glengarry numbers, okay?
I just snorted. It's how funny that was. That's a good reference. By the way,
you don't get these.
You don't get these.
Because
numbers.
Giving you these numbers would be like throwing them in the air.
Sally.
Leeds are crap. You're crap.
Shelly was Shelly, the guy.
Yeah.
What a great. You know, I've heard people say that really isn't that great a movie. It's that scene makes it.
I think there's an element to that. Yeah. I would agree with that.
I think it's an overrated, but that scene is absolutely
I'm not
worth.
Putting in the whole, 240 or what?
No,
it's a
no.
long one. It's a good movie. You should watch the whole thing if you haven't seen Glengarry Glen Ross. If you don't want to put it, I know, in this like instant gratification generation that we all take part in, just Google the Alec Baldwin scene.
Yes. And then Google the Alec Baldwin scene from SNL when he did a spot on spoof.
Always
of it.
Be cobbling.
Coco is for closers.
That's right.
I came here on a gumdrop with something. It's so good. Although he screwed up and said closing and then changed it back to cobbling.
Cobbling, yeah. And you could tell they were hurried. They were having to do the scene faster than...
It was the last one of the show. They had to kind of cram it in there.
And by the way, there's a number of F-bombs in the original one. They were replaced in the Saturday Night Live one because he was basically down on at a Santa's workshop. Mm-hmm. And he was bringing the noise from Santa. It comes straight from the North Pole.
That thing should have been the cold open. I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
That they spoiled that thing by putting it at the end.
And they buried it at the end. And he's like, these tools are crap. The tools are crap. Elf you, crap.
Elf you.
They replaced all the F-bombs with elf.
Elf you. Go play
elf
with,
you.
Go play with your kids.
what a moment.
But the departure point was you said interceptable passes. And I realized that Andy Reid was asked that question yesterday by our own Todd Lebo. And I found out that like, there is no correct way to spell interceptable because it actually isn't a word. So I was looking for the, why is the underline coming up both, whether it's an I or an
I? Don't know,
like, not really a word.
Okay. I don't know that we can go with the autocorrect as the ultimate decision when it comes to the language, because I'm quite sure I've never meant to call something a ducking pain in the ass. I'm quite sure. But yet it constantly autocorrects to that.
Yes.
Jed is not a ducking pain in the ass. He's not quacking. There's no element to it. But there is another kind of pain in the ass that Jed is.
Well, shot fired, man. Wow. Shot fired. Sitting here quietly.
206
right out of the gates.
Cell phones.
The one who stole the beginning of the show and decided, no, let's talk about Alec Baldwin for 9 minutes. Curtis.
I know my audience.
Thank you. I did enjoy it.
I knew. I'd find
anybody driving around
audience there. But, yeah, cell phones are a little, they try to be a little bit more intuitive than is absolutely necessary.
They're not sometimes trying to be intuitive. They're just like,
I think I know what you mean.
You're not saving the earth putting duck in for me. Okay,
I think I know what you mean ducking.
Get to it. I mean, there's clearly an attitude with the way I'm pressing the screen and what I'm typing. Do you think, like, let's see if he wants to soften his message a little bit?
Can't you sense the foot pounds of pressure I'm putting on with my thumb that I don't mean ducking now?
More likely to see if this phone can be a frisbee if you keep it up. Tim Grunhardt will be with us in the 4 o'clock hour. Chip Patterson from CBS talking some college football in the 5. Always enjoy talking to Chip Patterson.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the good ones.
Yes. Analysis, sense of humor, good dude, kind of checks all the boxes.
We had a list, and I don't remember what the hell we decided to put at the top. What do we put at the top? College football, wasn't it?
Yeah,
let's go with the latest. Should we just play it and then say what's wrong with this?
Yeah. I think we probably should.
Number three, if you could, Jed. This is Chris Klieman. Said his players need more positive words heading their way.
We had an opportunity to win all three games. We didn't. And now we have a chance to move forward in the next one. And you cannot trip on what's behind you. We didn't play well enough, and we got beat. And if you keep thinking about the negative, you're going to lose sight of what's coming in front of you. And I know that we have to challenge each other as coaches and challenge each other as players to be better, but you need to do that with a positive mindset. And sometimes we all have a tendency to take it from the negative standpoint. I'm telling you guys, 18 to 22-year-olds can't handle the negative side of things. And we have to, and I'm asking you guys, I'm asking for your help. We need to be more positive. I know we can play better. You know we can play better. But we've got to give these kids more positive things, because we've got a great locker room in there, kids that do care about each other, kids that love each other, coaches that believe in these kids, and we can't give up on them. Didn't mean that to be like the end. I should have dropped the mic and go.
Chris Klieman is a genuinely good human being. I don't know the man well, but I just know from the way he deals with people. Like, Bill Belichick may be a great guy, but let's be honest, there's a horse's ass in there. I mean, you don't conduct yourself with, you know, people trying to do their job and who are not coming at you with any kind of attitude. You don't conduct yourself the way. Doesn't mean he's a bad human being, but same thing with Greg Popovich. You know, if people are going to do their job and ask you legit questions and you're going to be an ass back to them, you've at least got that element to you. I've never seen that from Chris Klieman.
No.
I think he's a genuinely good person. I think he lives in a world where he assumes. I think he surrounds himself with genuinely good people. I think that's the world he lives in. I think we saw the first sign of the difference between 1AA and 1A. For those of you that don't like that, the FCS and the FBS. Okay, because it is different here. There is a lot more money riding on the line. They are name, image, and likeness guys right now. It changed. When they green-lighted paying them, for me it changed. Now, they're not all the way to pros, but, you know, the backup quarterback at Ohio State's making $400K a year. If he steps on the field next year and sucks and I'm in Columbus, Ohio, Graham Mertz, I'm rooting for. He's a local kid. The moment the NIL went into effect, he had his own Tom Brady TB12 logo ready to go and promote. And more power to you, man. Make it all for the 15, 16-year-old kids who sign out of Latin America, to the high school kids who sign in baseball for $5 or $6 million. Bubba Starling don't need to apologize for the $7-8 million he got from the Kansas City Royals. More power to you. I don't have any jealousy for that. I mean, I have jealousy for your athletic skills. I wish I was that kind of athlete.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, at least I you know, I can pay my bills, which is enough for me, to where I don't run around going, go. Wish I had Patrick Mahomes' money. Like, yeah. That ship sailed in my world. And maybe when you're younger, you still dream of having a $500 million contract. I don't know what it is, but I don't have any jealousy, but it does change. It's different. You're part of a big business machine.
And to put $400,000 a year in context, that's almost twice what I make.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's different. I get what he's saying. And maybe this is a part of, and I heard an interesting discussion, you know, and it's been brought, I think it's a, I don't know, not a pet peeve, but maybe a favorite subject. I think it's one that Corey Anderson would like to explore more, because I've had a couple of chats with him about the paid for team media, you know, or the team media, the team owned media. He said, they don't need us. I would disagree with that. I think that's going too far. They don't have to have us. I mean, they can get their message out. But I listen, just like, no, to this point, not that, you know, our last couple of years should make anybody think the United States and its approach to doing things is destined to go a couple of thousand years. But to this point, the state-owned media, like, are not countries that end up doing well.
No.
Right? Usually there's a revolt. I mean, people aren't dumb. And I think that's true even faster with fans. You know, having the team guy, and I, you know, there have been a number of guys that have held the position, let's say, with the Kansas City Chiefs, and every press conference with, how great is it going to be back in Arrowhead? Listen, I don't sweat that guy. I you know, especially once I had conversations with folks that have had that job, they're like, listen, they want up for the social media, the coach saying how great it is in Arrowhead. I'm like, roll back the one from last year. He says the same thing, like, they want a new one every week. Like, I got you. That's a guy doing his job, and I respect it.
Yeah.
Right? But the fans, you know, in the midst of a 12-game losing streak, the team-owned media rep who asked the club, how great is it to be back in Arrowhead, is a joke. I mean, the fans are like, I don't want to hear that. And they'll turn on the website. They'll turn on the team-owned media. They'll, you know, being the play-by-play guy and blowing smoke up everyone's rear end when the team sucks, it ain't easy, right? I mean, the best I've ever seen at it is Ryan Lefevre.
Yes.
I mean, he is honest, sincere, accurate about what's going on without blowing up the team, without being rude to the team. He protects the team, but he's not just a shill, right? I know it's hard because I don't hear many people pull it off the way Ryan does.
Nope.
Right? So I know it's not easy. But Ryan's as good as it gets. And I know he doesn't have to be out there, you know, all the time throughout an off season, what have you. But Ryan Lefevre does a fantastic job of representing the Royals organization with class and dignity during really bad times. So does Dayton Moore, who is honest. I mean, I think that probably helps that Dayton Moore's the general manager of the team. He's not out there picking fights with and trying to blame it on everybody else. He comes out there and says, yeah, we did this, you know, we didn't want to fall this hard, but here's where we are. You know, listen, my point to this on Chris Kleiman is when you're in those, there's the play-by-play guy, there's the team, you know, pregame guy, you know, they're not all Tim Fitzgerald, who, by the way, been around Manhattan, Kansas, and covering K-State athletics, and he's going to let fly whatever he thinks needs to be said. But there's a lot of guys that are like friends of the program that are in that room. You know, and I'm going to be honest with you, then there's a lot of student news. Not that they're not good. You know, they're young. They're raw. But there's a lot of them that are, boy, they're just happy to be in that room.
There's little separation between them and an employee of the school who does that stuff.
This is interesting because I think Chris Kleiman really misread the room. You don't say that. And he's not the first coach to say it. And it's the first concerning thing I've heard from Chris Klieman. You guys can vouch for this. Our conversation earlier today, my topic on K-State was to tell Cat fans, relax.
Yeah.
You had a pretty good chance of losing these three coming in. Right? If you could get one, you were thinking this could be an 8-4 season. Right? Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, listen, I know what K-State football wants. They want to get back to winning 10 games. They want to fight for conference championships. They've been there. They know the program's capable of doing it. Bill Snyder did it. I don't know that they're capable of doing it as often as Bill Snyder did until they find the next Bill Snyder, and Bill Snyder's a pretty special guy. Okay, Chris Klieman might be him. Likely, he's not. There's a fun phrase you'll hear today in the 5 o'clock hour. Don't ask me why I know it's coming. I just know it's coming. That I think will apply to some K-State fans.
Yeah.
In fact, all fans in this region when it comes to our football teams. And, you know, even if you, like for me, I root for Syracuse. It applies to me. But that's concerning. That's a miscalculation on his part. Does he need to be fired? Is it a sign that he's drowning? No, because my whole point to today, my topic, because I said, let's do some college football. So often, all Monday is Chiefs. And a lot of times, that spills over. But I really feel like in reading the room yesterday, Chiefs fans are kind of, they're in purgatory. It's not, let's storm the gates, we got to fire the defensive coordinator anymore. He had a pretty good performance. It's not get rid of Dan Sorensen. They sat him down, and it worked. I mean, Chiefs fans got a lot of what they wanted, and they got a win. They're not ready to say, let's ride the train all the way to the parade. But it appeased the anger, but yet no one's still ready to buy in on the positivity trade. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's kind of this, I'm like, I don't know that the Chiefs are the... I said, let's do some college football today. We were talking about it. I said, I think there's some really compelling things going on. But I really feel like, you know, for K-State, hey, the subject was get a win against Stanford, which they did, which at times proves to be a great win when they beat Oregon, and at times not so good. When they lose to Washington State, who's about to fire their coach, granted, because he won't get a vaccination, not because he can't figure out the team, but that was a good win. Beat Southern Illinois. Nevada was a tough game. They housed Nevada, and Nevada is a good team with an NFL quarterback. Right, the house was looking good. But you knew the next three, at Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Iowa State, was going to be a tough stretch. Really, you thought there was only one other tough game at Texas. Baylor has risen up to prove that they're Dave Aranda.
Aranda
is, you know, a name that's now on the board for LSU's job. He's done such a good job at Baylor. So that game has risen up to be tougher than you thought. Maybe Nevada played down. Maybe Stanford played down. But you knew at this schedule you were likely to be 3-3. Really, weren't you hoping to be 4-2? I mean, Iowa State was a top 10 team coming into this.
Yeah. Like, didn't you? All three of those teams have at some point been in the top 10. Two of them are right now.
Yeah, I think it. You know, like maybe you thought coming into the year, okay, we're going to get Oklahoma State because the expectations weren't this high for Oklahoma State. But like, how can you be so upset? Yeah. But that's a sword that cuts both ways. Chris Klieman, how can your kid's psyche be this low that you're reaching out saying, I need the media around to be a little bit more positive? And I think it'll be interesting, and we'll try to get Chris Klieman on to discuss it, because is this just an inexperience of knowing that, listen, when you say it, it's going a lot of places. North Dakota State, it ain't going very far. And how much adversity did you really face?
Yeah, and almost everyone around you is on your side anyway. As
well, but that's what he thinks is going on in Manhattan, Kansas.
Right. He doesn't realize that there's a big city to the east that's not purple.
Yeah, and the purple fans nobody at North Dakota State watches day in, day out the proceedings and the questioning of a professional football team.
Yeah. Good point.
Right? Like, this is something Lebo and I have talked about. Eli Drinkwitz, I think, is, and we're going to find out how he does on the SEC conference call tomorrow, but I think Eli Drinkwitz is having a little problem with this. I think he sits on that conference call and hears the softballs lobbed out from Starkville, Mississippi, and Oxford, Mississippi, and all the college towns. It's a love fest. I mean, they're humping the leg of the coach Jimbo Fisher loses two games in a row and has just been given a $90 million contract, and you'd have thought he was undefeated a couple of weeks ago. Right? I mean, they were still just lapdogs waiting to be pet by Jimbo Fisher. There wasn't like a Jimbo, I mean, clearly the optics aren't good to get the kind of contract extension you got and then promptly drop two in a row, one of which to Arkansas. Now, he's rallied, obviously, with the win against Alabama, backed that up by not letting down against Missouri.
Crushing a good Missouri squad.
Crushing Missouri. It was the straight face with which you said it.
Missouri squad.
What was thought to be a strong Missouri squad. You know, I think it is interesting. Like, I think Chris Klieman hears all those softballs, and he doesn't recognize that. Yeah, but a lot of your media, I've been on when it's just the Columbia folks. And they, you know, the papers, which are down there, the only ones with the beat reporters down there from Kansas City and St. Louis, the Star, anyway, hires kids that just got out of Mizzou. Like, aren't the last three all just right out of Mizzou? And I like the Star. Everybody knows. I read the paper. I'm a subscriber, online subscriber to the Star. Love the newspaper. Okay? But, like, they're... Last three beat, right?
It was Alex Schiffer and Aaron Reese at the same time, and then they had Soichi Tereda take over when they both moved on to a greener
pastures. And now they've got a young lady who just graduated from Mizzou, right?
Yeah, I can't remember her name offhand, but that sounds right.
Or she's getting ready to start the beat. I remember when it was announced.
Lila Bromberg.
St. Louis has Dave Matter. He's been around the block.
Yeah.
But... You know, so even, but previous to that, Mike D'Armond has been around the Royals and Chiefs being covered. Mike D'Armond was not going to come down there and purr and neither's Gabe D'Armond, frankly. You know, there are people down there. I'm not saying everybody down there's a lapdog. That's not the case. Tim Fitzgerald in Manhattan is not. Gabe D'Armond is not. You know, they do great jobs covering those teams. But there's a lot of it. There's a lot more of it on the college campus. And for Mizzou, for Eli Drinkwitz, like Lebo said it best, he's like, yeah, I don't think Eli gets it that you got people that cover professional teams. You know, the Cardinals and Blues in St. Louis and formerly the Rams, the Chiefs and Royals and Sporting here in Kansas City. Like, they're people ask real questions. It's not just fluffy features about how the backup tackle, you know, is a likes to eat Twinkies, right? Like, that's not the only stories that are being written and handled, and it's not the way teams are covered in major markets, in professional sports markets. Chris Klieman misread the room. And it's something, should he be fired? No. Does it mean he's drowning? No. Is it something to put in the file and file away? We talk about that all the time. Like, do we file this away?
Yes.
Like, next year, the team's struggling, and he's, you know, it goes full on Butch Jones. You remember Butch Jones at Tennessee, who basically had somewhat of a breakdown.
Yeah.
Saying, guys, like, you're ripping us everywhere. This is killing us in recruiting. Like, stop writing about how I'm about to be fired. You're making it more difficult to do the job. That's not how it works.
No.
Do the job right, and the stories will promote that. If you're struggling, the stories are going to look bad. Now, I do think, and Jason Anderson mentioned this jokingly because we know of his trials and tribulations and fights and arguments about where the Missouri job ranks, but he's like, I don't know how anybody could coach down there at Tennessee with those fans throwing everything out on the field. Like, how could that be a better job than Missouri? Tennessee, I will give it Knoxville, which is a bigger town than people may realize if you haven't been down there, and has quite a bit of Nashville and Memphis, mostly Nashville, but Memphis too, covering it. They're rougher. I mean, that media, they'll go after folks, mm-hmm. and it has. It's harder to win there. You know, I think this is of note. You file this away and go, you know, maybe you reach out. Like, if you're thinking you're play-by-play guys or you got some guys that you're like, hey, I've given you good stuff. You kind of owe me one. Here's one. You don't do it out there in front of everybody.
No. As you said, read the room wrong, and I think that 5 seconds of silence at the end, which was broken by Klieman himself, not another question, kind of speaks to that. And our friend Kellis Robinette, it was the original tweet that I saw, kind of discussed what he had said, space, awkward.
Yeah.
That puts it into one word. That was awkward.
I will say to Chris Klieman, because my point to the fans today was, relax, Cat fans. At Tech is, I mean,
I know when you fall to 3-3, you're like, oh, God, well, I don't know if we're going to win at Tech, and I don't know if we're going to win at TCU. And I think you're going to win at least one of them, and I won't be shocked if you win both. What's the spread? Tech minus one?
Yep.
Wrong team favored. I'll take the Cats, although this doesn't make me feel good. I was all ready to take the Cats. This makes me like, is he looking around at his team and like, these guys, I'm losing them. Like, that does scare the hell out of me.
Yep.
I expect Chris Klieman to have his team ready to go. I expect him to win the special teams battle. I expect Chris Klieman to manage the clock and do all the things he does. I think he's an excellent game manager. I think he does a pretty damn good job of getting his team ready. I haven't seen anybody shuffle players around during a pandemic and not know who's going to play and do a better job of lining up and looking like a professional outfit. Like, I don't mean like their pay. I mean, like, they looked like, hey, we were ready to play. It didn't matter what was coming our way. TCU, I like their chances at TCU or at home against TCU. At KU, they're going to win. West Virginia, Baylor's on a roll right now, but I don't think Baylor's unbeatable, particularly in Manhattan. And then a trip down to take on Texas. That's a tough one, but Chris Klieman specializes in taking teams that maybe have more talent, more depth of talent, and keeping his team in the game, hanging around, and being there to where it's going to come down to a few plays at the end, and his team does a pretty damn good job of making them. It's frightening if I'm a Cat fan. I'm a little bit nervous. But, yeah, I have a different view after he makes that statement. I thought, well, listen, you got to be looking at this saying we're taking – at least three of our next four, going to be looking at 6-4 going into Baylor at home and at Texas. You know, I think they're taking three out of the next four. At least I did this morning.
Right.
Now I'm wondering if he's looking around going, we got problems. Like, these kids aren't buying in. We know they had a number of kids transfer. I thought he did a fantastic job in the transfer portal of replacing a number of kids, because there was a lot of quietly behind the scenes doom and gloom being talked about the quantity of kids that were leaving. Most of the conversation was not pointing towards Chris Klieman being the reason for the exit. It was about an overall environment at the university. Yeah. Okay? But he did an excellent job of finding good talent in the portal. I think as he gets more experience at that, I think K-State's a great – I think it can be a dominant force in the transfer portal. Great fan base, chance to come in and play in a good league, a really good league, even after Oklahoma and Texas leaves, and a history of pros, right? Pro football players come through Manhattan, Kansas. You're going to be well-coached. I think Chris Klieman's going to do really well in the transfer portal. So, you know – this stops me in my tracks. My message was, I think it's full speed ahead. I think this team is probably looking at 7-5, which on this year is pretty good, with an outside track of still getting to 8-4. Because this is about maybe one game behind where we thought they'd be. So I don't get the panic. But the coach kind of panicked today, and that scares me. 913-3-810-810. Take your phone calls next. Got some more college football we want to talk about. Get to Monday Night Football as well. You're listening to the program here on the home of the National Football League, Sports Radio, 810 WHB.
The program with Soren Petro.
Gosh, I was such a reject in school. If only someone could have just stuffed food down the front of my pants, and I felt so much more important.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio, 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. K-State Wildcats dropped three in a row. All the quality opponents. Chris Klieman saying they were in every game. They could have won every game. Not quite there with Oklahoma State. I mean, he did cut it to, what, 11 in the third with the last touchdown. Then there was no scoring the rest of the way. But I think you got to be within a score in the second half to say you had a chance to win the game. I think he's a very good football coach. You know, that's not always enough. Part of being a very good football coach at the BCS level is being able to recruit as well and then being able to manage those recruits. I think it's also about building a staff and being able to replace members of your staff. As you have success, people get hired away. As we could see, Ed Orgeron could not maintain it, and he is going to be ending his tenure at LSU at the end of this year. So there's a lot of elements that go into it. I think Chris Klieman has a lot of those traits. He made a mistake today, I will say that. 913-3-810-810, Jim. You're in the program. What's going on, Jim?
Hey, Soren. Thanks for taking my call. put, as a K-State graduate, I kind of want to, I think maybe Klieman was trying to address K-State Nation more than anything. And here's where I'm coming from on that. This was a really big game for K-State fans. You go back 2 years ago, K-State beat Iowa State by 10 in Manhattan, had beat Iowa State 10 out of 11 years, if you go 2 years ago. COVID hits, K-State, the quarterback gets hurt, K-State goes up to Iowa State and gets slaughtered. Now, I understand that in the minds of most people across the country, Iowa State right now is head and shoulder program above K-State. That's not how K-State people felt a week ago, okay? We can beat these guys, and we're waiting for it. And they went out, and it was lackluster. So and I felt the same way. I was waiting for this game. As a K-State fan, that was a very, very disheartening performance on Saturday night because that's a program that – I'm not going to say you should be, but you should compete with them because the recruiting classes aren't that far apart. I think K-State, but anyway, we can get on.
No, I think you make a good point. I think you make a very good point, Jim, because I've had this discussion with a couple of people because I had a couple of K-State people reach out to me and say, why is Iowa State get all the hype? I'm not convinced they're in front of K-State. I think there was that mindset, and I think there was a feeling
they
that,
are now.
Right, exactly. And I think there was a feeling that, hey, to keep Iowa State beneath us, right? Like just one win or one good finish doesn't throw Iowa State out in front. But there has been a coaching change in Manhattan. There was a feeling that, hey, let's get this win, and then we can definitively say, hey, we beat Iowa State this many out of this many. And now with Iowa State winning, there's a feeling that, okay, the torch has been passed.
They have 3 out of 4 now.
But how many programs would you say in the Big 12 are definitively ahead of K-State?
Oh, I don't know, sir. OU. Maybe 3, 4.
Okay, OU. Is Oklahoma State?
OU. Probably.
Okay.
I mean, you know.
Iowa State, right? We're saying Iowa State, yes. What about Texas?
Yeah. Only because they are Texas. But
okay,
yeah, I mean,
that's a good way to look at it, just because of the built-in advantages of what they are. I think that's a really fair, honest way. That's what I'd kind of say is like, Not on wins and losses, they're not, right? But based upon we know the sway they have down in that state with the amount of players that are down there, the amount of money that's down there. So for that, if somebody wanted to say, if K-State fans wanted to argue all day they're better than Texas, I ain't wasting my time arguing with them. But if Texas fans wanted to, I'm not wasting my time that way either. So I think that's a fair point. What about Baylor?
Probably not right now.
I don't think so either. They're playing well now, but I'm not ready to just say I think they're kind of like K-State. Maybe when they – I think the scandal that they had erased a lot of the success, a lot of the equity that had been built up by Art Briles. And as soon as Matt Rhule left, that next year they crashed. Now they're back quicker than people thought they were going to be, as bad as last year ended up being. TCU, no. West Virginia, no. Texas Tech, no. Kansas, God, no. So they're in a pretty good spot. And I think that's part of maybe what shocked him was how much I think K-State fans, you're right, had a ton on this game. They had a ton of emotion and, you know, program worth. I don't want to say self-worth because I don't think anybody went home
this
going, go.
This loss really hurt. It did.
And I don't think he's felt that yet. You know, had he beaten Oklahoma, one of the things we discussed this morning, I said, when you beat OU, it erases a lot. Right. If KU were good, like when you beat your rival, if Michigan can beat Ohio State, then people don't mind the 7-5 right at Michigan. K-State doesn't have that anymore with Kansas because they've been so bad. So what's kind of replaced it is we'll get us a big, fat signature win. He's done that each of the last 2 years. And now he didn't get that done against OU, although I thought it was a really impressive coaching performance just to hang around in that game the way they did. But, yeah, I hear you, and it was an important game, and it did definitively, I think you're right, say, okay, Iowa State is now in front of K-State. But you're only 1 year away from being able to change that, right? Like, are we convinced Iowa State is like, Matt Campbell's going to be there forever, and Iowa State's just going to be this machine?
No, but he's got it going. They got a heck of a recruiting class coming in. The quarterback's young. It's and K-State's got to go there next year. So for a one-on-one comparison with Iowa State, it doesn't look dim, but it looks like it's going to be a pretty tough road. And just one last thought, Seren.
Okay.
I think Klieman came across with his remarks as a little naive. I think he was more trying to address K-State Nation than the media. But I'd rather have a guy who looks a little naive than the guy who blames the media for everything and wants to act like an, you know, a Bob Knight guy trying yelling at a reporter about every other time. And that Kleiman will never be that guy.
No,
but I agree. I think those comments came across as a little naive. And thanks for taking the call.
I appreciate it, Jim. It's always a fun conversation with you, my friend. I always enjoy it. But the one thing I will push back on, Brock Purdy's not a young quarterback. He's been around there seemingly for 10 years. I think he got there when Perry Ellis got to Kansas.
It's funny to see that his passer rating is virtually unchanged. It's like you just cut and copied.
Isn't that the same season. What I always say? Like the thing about that, why Iowa State hasn't realized the potential that they think they have every year. They've ended up falling short. They end up being a really good team, but they end up falling short of what people like, oh, this is a year, top 10, like top 10. Like, I have no doubt they're going to finish in the top 25. I think they're going to get a bunch of wins and finish in the top 25. But Brock Purdy is just the guy he was that first year.
Yeah, he just throws the ball better. More. You know, that's the only thing.
I get it, Jim. I mean, this is one where you look at this school looks like our school. And frankly, it's a school that's got to fly over Manhattan to get to some of the talent.
Yeah. The fact that they played at your place, they led the game a minute 12 in and never trailed.
Yeah.
And it ended up being 33-20. It was 30-13 with about 9 minutes left. I mean, they weren't really – I would push back a little bit on his assertion that you know, we could have won both games.
At the end of the third quarter, yeah. It was 27-7.
Yeah. They were down 27-10 and 37-23 to OU, and they were down 31-13 to Oklahoma State at the half. I would quibble with his – idea that they could have won all three of those games. They weren't really deeply in any of them.
I was impressed with the fight that they showed,
yeah.
But the worst one of the bunch was the last one.
Yeah.
And that's the taste that, you know, Jim and other K-State fans have in their mouth right now. Yeah. And so I think that's a tough pill to swallow. I get it. I mean, I do. The Missouri Tigers.
What about them?
They've got a bye week.
I'll take the bye and the points if they're getting any.
What is the expectation now for Missouri moving forward?
I don't think, speaking as at least one portion of the Missouri fan base, I don't think there is one. Because the earlier part of the year, there was irritation.
There's an expectation.
Yeah.
There's always an expectation.
Yeah, but what I mean is that there's no
longer. You think they're going to fall at Vandy in 2 weeks?
I think it's possible.
Really?
I think it's absolutely possible. Early on in the year, I thought, because we don't know. I mean, what's going to happen in between then? I mean, if this team has become suddenly,
what do you mean,
free
like
fall,
a meteor is going to hit?
No,
them?
I mean if they crater completely, they roll into that game and they're just. I mean,
well, it's their next game.
Oh, that's right. I had the schedule.
Vanderbilt has Mississippi
State.
That's
right. They're off this week, so.
So presumably.
For some reason, in my mind, I had Vanderbilt.
A Vanderbilt team that's won at Colorado State 24-21 and beat a Connecticut team that is one of the worst five teams in the country 30-28. Remember, Connecticut laid only three to UMass, which is the worst team in the country.
Maybe I'm being too reflexively negative.
42-0 loss to Florida. They did go down 21-20 to South Carolina, but 62-0 to Georgia. Lost 41-23 to Stanford. Lost to East Tennessee State 23-3.
Our friend Tom Fornelli, who refuses to return my texts anymore, has them in his bottom 25 at number 17, K. So
yeah,
one of
like
the 17 worst teams in the country.
But I mean, think of what I've seen the last month and a half from this team. I've seen something I didn't think was possible. From this program, early on there was some irritation. You're like, come on! And then there came a point. I'm not sure if that point was Tennessee or when it was, when I just stopped having an expectation that it would be worked out. I mean, I don't necessarily. There's not an anger or anything. I'm just like, I go into every week thinking, I don't think they're going to win.
I don't know what I'll do. I'll see what the spread is with Vanderbilt. I don't know how I'll pick it. I still had an expectation that Drinkwitz was going to be able to turn the A&M game into, like, you know, 45-41.
Yeah.
Like, I've given up any thought that they're going to slow anyone down on defense. But I think maybe the part, if there's cause for concern with the Missouri Tigers, it's that you're not seeing offensive brilliance.
No.
Right? Like, that to me is the part where it's like, okay, he can hire, and you would expect him to hire another defensive coordinator. But beyond Tyler Beatty,
yeah, you have one dude
What are you? You know, and I'll give, you know, the offensive lines blocking, and you know, there's other elements that go into it when you're talking about a running game in college football. But Tyler Beatty's been fantastic, but he's a senior.
Yeah.
So, and Connor Bazelak's been. I mean, talk about, you know, Brock Purdy not really developing. I wouldn't say he hasn't developed. I think he's gotten better, but, you know, what do we got here? Against Southeast Missouri, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Against North Texas, 2-0. Right? Against the squads that call Power 5 leagues home overall, and I don't know why this is. I made the mistake of trying to look at all of his game log, which apparently is asking too much on the site. Against the Power 5s, he is... Well, he's 0 touchdowns and 4 INTs in his last 2 against Power 5s, A&M and Tennessee. 1-6. The 4-1 against Kentucky helps. 5-7. He's 5 touchdowns, 7 interceptions against Power 5 schools. He is 7-0 against non-Power 5 schools.
Yeah.
Like, to me, the troubling thing, like the defense, I feel like, okay, you know, they'll put some money behind him to go hire a guy with, you know, some swag as the defensive coordinator. I think that's a pretty easy one. Not easy. It's not easy. I don't want to mean easy. But I see that solution. But he's going to be the offensive guy.
Yes. And even from a year ago, I just saw in a number of games, you'd see, oh, wow, he's good at getting guys open. At that high school open, I see a lot of open receivers. I'm not seeing any of that this year. Maybe it's just the receiver group. Maybe the offensive line isn't getting on time. On every drop back, seemingly, Connor Bazelak takes a few steps back, looks around, and either is flushed out, flushed to the side, or throws the ball near a guy who's got a defensive back draped on him. I don't see any open receivers. And that, if it weren't for Tyler Beatty, I think their offense would be non-existent.
I said, look, Connor Bazelak surprised some people, but if Connor Bazelak doesn't get a lot better, he better recruit somebody who can replace him. And I definitely think that Brady Cook came to Mizzou thinking he's going to replace him at some point, not that he's going to wait, you know, for his, his redshirt junior and senior year to start for 2 years. That's going to start becoming a question. Like, do you pull the redshirt on Brady Cook? I probably, it depends on if you think Brady Cook's an NFL quarterback. If you think he's an NFL quarterback, then yes, pull it. Because he's going to go after 3 if he's exceptional, whether he plays the first year or not, 4 if he's pretty good. You know, it depends on what do you think you have. Do you think you got an NFL quarterback? Then pull it, because he's leaving anyway.
People are calling for one of the other two freshmen, Tyler Macon, to play. At some point.
Maybe I'm getting him confused. Which is the kid? I am getting him confused. Macon's the kid, the highly recruited kid from last year, right? That signed. He's the first year on campuses this year.
I believe.
Which one's the one? He also plays baseball.
No, I'm not sure. Because it's Bazelak and 3 freshmen. And one of the freshmen is Drew Luck's little brother, who's not going to play.
I forget which one it is. Anyway, whichever one was the hot shot top 100 kid.
Yeah.
Which one is that?
I'm trying. I think that might be.
Is that Macon?
Tyler Macon, class of 23.
I'm just looking at a depth chart. Cook was second.
Looks like it's baseball as well. I think it is.
Okay, so Tyler Macon. So then the question is, if he is a pro, he's only going to stick around for 3 years if he's exceptional, 4 years if he's good. I mean, do you pull the red shirt on him?
Not this season. I don't think there's anything to be gained from it this season.
Okay. I got. Let me dig around. I want to make sure I'm talking about the right quarterback and what's coming, because I'm out over my skis a little bit on the recruiting since the kid isn't playing. But you know, that's going to be a big. He's got to get the quarterback position right. We've talked about how important it is with the other schools. It's true at Missouri as well. It's more so. Because of Gary Pinkel's, what I think is a legendary line, we will always have a quarterback while I'm at Mizzou.
And he started off, there was some good fortune that he was able to bring Brad Smith with him, who changed. He immediately had that guy.
No, there was no good fortune.
Well,
he brought him.
He brought him. That's what I'm saying. I mean, one of the reasons that he already had that guy in place, and Eli Drinkwitz didn't have that guy in place. But it's to Pingle's credit that he did.
Yeah.
And it continued. He showed that it wasn't a fluke by getting Chase Daniel and Tyler and Blaine Gabbert and James Franklin and you fill in the blank as you went along, Drew Locke. He always had a guy.
Of course, there's always somebody to help me out here. My buddy Tim, big Mizzou guy. 22. There's a 20. Okay, so maybe I'm getting confused with the kid who's coming in 22. He says I'm confusing the kids that are there now with the kid who's coming in 22. Out of Georgia. Yeah, this is him.
Both these kids.
Because he wears 21, and I remember saying, yeah. I swear to God, I hate quarterbacks that wear 20s.
It's both the two guys we talked about from St. Louis.
Yeah, no, this is the kid. He's a kid who's coming in next year, so he's not an option, clearly. But, you know, he's got to get the quarterback position right.
Yep.
And again, I will state that the defense, I think, is something that with a good hire can be fixed. But he's not firing himself on the offensive side. And when they're down 21-0, yes, the defense is giving up 3 touchdowns, but the offense is not scoring at least 2 consecutive times.
It's not 21-17.
Yeah.
It's 21-0.
That, to me, is that's if there's a reason to be, like, what's going on there is that they're not putting points. I would feel better losing, if I were a Missouri fan, 52-38.
Yeah, that Kentucky game.
44. Yeah, I mean, like, getting some points on the board, and that's just not happening right now. We'll take a break. You're in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Do the show, bitch.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here in the program. Coming up in our next hour, Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. He's all giddy. He's been texting me. Interceptable passes, a subject we will discuss with the data scientist, one of the bigwigs over there at Pro Football Focus. We didn't get into Kansas. Did you have anything? I mean,
compelling.
Is this a compelling matchup for you coming up this week?
Well, absolutely, they're all compelling.
Oklahoma,
when you cheer for a squad as good as these Rockjack Jayhawks.
Some of the reactions I got. Can you imagine what would be said if Bill Self said we need more positivity around here? You know,
come on, guys.
Kansas doesn't lose games. They're always positive.
You know. It is, like I said, it's a misstep by Chris Klieman. I don't think it's a career ender. They need to get a win. Get a win. People will be back on his side. Not that they're not on his side now, but we'll be a little more positive around there.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Show. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, NFL, what is the most one-sided divisional series over the past 30 years? Who over who? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.